This is an ABC podcast.
I now call upon the Nobel Peace Prize laureate of 2019 to come forward and give his Nobel lecture. Prime Minister.
The Nobel Peace Prize is awarded to those who prevent conflict and civil unrest. It's given to world leaders or worthy organisations. And last year, the top prize went to the Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed for his work resolving his nation's border conflict with neighbouring Eritrea.
I am honoured to be here with you today and grateful to the Norwegian Nobel Committee for recognising and encouraging my contribution to a peaceful resolution of the border dispute between Ethiopia and Eritrea.
But one year later, there's not a lot of peace in Ethiopia. Fighting has broken out with reports of mass killings, which some have likened to genocide. Now, Ethiopia's government claims it has quelled an uprising in the country's northern Tigray region, scattering the Tigray People's Liberation Front fighters to the hills. But there are conflicting reports about what happened and how long the peace might last. I'm Stephen Smiley.
And I'm Madeleine Jenner, and today on The Signal, could last year's Nobel Peace Prize winner be on his way to forming an authoritarian regime? And what does it mean for the future of Africa's second most populated country?
To Ethiopia, where Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed has announced a, quote, final military operation against the defiant Tigray province in coming days. The federal government has carried out...
So, over the last 3 weeks, a war has been raging in Ethiopia. The United Nations has been warning that 6 million people in the region of Tigray could soon be without food and water. And there's very little information about what is actually going on. When a power struggle broke out, the government essentially plunged the area into a complete media blackout. The phones aren't working and there's no internet.
Yeah, so some Ethiopians haven't been able to contact family for weeks, let alone get accurate details of what is actually happening on the ground. Now, over the weekend, the Ethiopian government announced its armed forces were now fully in control of the city of Mekele, one of the cities at the centre of this fighting.
The Ethiopian government says its forces have taken control of Mekele, the capital of the defiant Tigray region, hours after the military launched the final push to retake the city from the Tigray People's Liberation Front.
Which sounds like the government is saying the conflict is over, but the media blackout continues and no one is too sure about what happens next.
So my name is Zakarias Zalalem. I'm an Ethiopian freelance journalist. I'm currently in Toronto and I tend to go between Ethiopia and Canada for my work.
And can I ask why you're largely Canadian-based?
Well, at this moment in time, it's pretty dangerous to work as a member of Ethiopia's local press within the country. There's a bit of a repressive environment. So coming here, it's sort of like a safe haven for me when things get a little bit too risque back home.
Let's start by just establishing where exactly the Tigray region of Ethiopia is in the country and what is significant about it.
So the region of Tigray is in Ethiopia's northwest. And the region, well, the inhabitants of the region were led by the Tigrayan People's Liberation Front, or the TPLF regional party. So this the TPLF party was also at the helm of Ethiopian government for a period of 27 years between 1991 and 2018. So for about a generation, they had dominated Ethiopian politics until being ousted from government in 2018.
Well, the next task is swearing in Abiy Ahmed in the parliament as the new prime minister of Ethiopia. And the real work of rebuilding people's confidence.
So the new look government that we've had in Ethiopia for the past 2 years was always at odds with the TPLF, which had resorted to only governing in its home region of Tigray, and worsening tensions between the two over the course of a year or so eventually deteriorated until we saw the breakout of military hostilities on November 4th.
Okay, so just to recap, until 2 years ago, the TPLF, or Tigray People's Liberation Front, controlled the government. Then the current PM, Abiy Ahmed, sweeps to power. He resolves the border tensions and things are looking up. But the TPLF aren't happy about losing power. And on the 4th of November, fighting breaks out again between the military and the TPLF.
Yeah, and the events that led to that outbreak of fighting are contested. The Prime Minister says the government was responding to an attack on its military base in Tigray. The TPLF say the government betrayed an agreement to allow autonomy in Tigray, eroding the rights and freedoms of its people.
Okay, so the event on November 4th signalled a kind of outbreak of war in Tigray. And part of the reason this came as a shock, maybe to some in Ethiopia, but definitely to the rest of the world, was because of who Ethiopia's leader is. So before we go any further, can you perhaps tell us a bit about the Ethiopian Prime Minister?
Well, the Ethiopian Prime Minister, when he came to power in 2018, he came on the back of popular uprisings that had brought Ethiopia to a halt. As I mentioned, Ethiopia had the same TPLF-led administration for 27 years that had ruled the country with an iron fist. So Abiy came and he promised reforms. He promised an opening up of the political space. He promised to free tens of thousands of political prisoners.
On to Ethiopia now, where newly elected Prime Minister Dr. Abiy Ahmed Ali is touring the country in an attempt to calm tensions that have been simmering. His first stop was Ethiopian Somali region. As CGTN's Giram Chala reports, Dr.
Which he did. And suddenly there was a whirlwind of changes that rendered the country almost unrecognizable. You had media outlets operating freely. You had political organizations that had been in exile for decades allowed back into the country. The pace with which things had just transformed was unprecedented. And then, obviously, the peace deal with neighboring Eritrea that ended 20 years of hostility that later secured him the Nobel Peace Prize. I mean, it was groundbreaking and had instilled a lot of optimism amongst Ethiopians and, of course, the rest of the world as well. Thank you.
I am committed to toil for peace every single day and in all seasons. I am my brother's keeper. I am my sister's keeper too. I have promises to keep before I sleep. I have miles to go on the road of peace.
What we've seen since has been a gradual resorting to repressive government methods of operating. So you've seen a lot of the political opposition members and journalists rearrested. And by midway 2020, a lot of people were highlighting similarities between the current leadership and the previous administration that we thought had gone.
Do you have any sense of what changed?
Well, I mean, it's unclear. Obviously, it was a letdown for many people. But what happened is that, I guess, when it comes to Ethiopian government, old habits die hard. So journalists started to be arrested again. Exiled politicians were once again forced to either leave the country or were rounded up and arrested. And the optimism and the era of reform that we thought would characterize the post-2018 era no longer took shape.
Yeah, and I guess there's almost some confirmation of that deterioration in the government's response after November the 4th, right? So one of the first things that happened was communications in and out of the Tigray region went dark. Has that sort of thing happened before, and how hard does that make getting information out?
Yes, so this is it's relatively atypical of the Ethiopian government's modus operandi for the past 5-6 years. During the final years of the TPLF-led Ethiopian government rule of the country, when popular uprisings broke out across the country, the Ethiopian government would normally shut off internet access to areas of the country that had become fraught with protester activity to prevent news of the uprisings reaching other regions of the country and reaching the world. At times, it even went as far as criminalizing the posting of seemingly critical content on Facebook or on Twitter. Scores of people were arrested for doing just that. This year, at least 2 or 3 times now that I'm aware of, where the Ethiopian government shut off internet and phone access to entire regions of the country, either to prevent news of atrocities being carried out by its own forces, or to prevent the news of or greater scrutiny of its own military forces in areas that they're operating. And I am of the belief that it's the same sort of motivations that led to them deciding to shut off internet and phone access across the Tigray region, because journalists have had an impossibly difficult time verifying anything that comes out of the region.
But despite the government's best attempts to control information, some news is still getting out.
There was a particularly bloody incident a few weeks ago, though, wasn't there? November the 9th, I think, which has been sort of reported as the bloodiest day of the conflict.
Yeah.
Taking those caveats that you've laid out there about the difficulty in shoring up information, what do we think happened then, and who was responsible for the deaths?
So what happened in the town of Maykadra in Tigray was that some, at the very least hundreds, although Ethiopia's Human Rights Commission put the death toll at 600 civilians, mostly innocent laborers who hail from other parts of the country or from the Amhara region, who were attacked and killed with blunt objects, mostly machetes and knives, likely by members of a TPLF or Tigrayan regional government affiliated militia. This is something that Ethiopia's Human Rights Commission established on its own. And Amnesty International was able to use satellite images as well as a video that somehow got out from the region to establish that a massacre had occurred there. For the video to have come out, I mean, that the footage had to have been smuggled out. So this shows just how difficult the task would be. It is, from what we've been able to note thus far, the single worst atrocity in the area since the beginning of hostilities on November 4th. However, the list of atrocities that journalists have documented thus far is not exhaustive, because there may have been other killings that have gone unreported thus far. I do suspect that perhaps weeks or months down the line, there will be a swarm of new graphic images, videos, photos emanating from the conflict that will highlight just how bloody this war has been. And I believe that the worst is yet to come.
All right. Now, on top of the prediction of more violence to come, Zakaria says that the nature of the fighting is going to change now too. As we said before, over the weekend, Abiy Ahmed's government claimed a major victory when his troops recaptured the Tigrayan capital, Mekelle, pushing the rebels out.
Yeah, so Zakaria says that means an end to conventional fighting between Ethiopian troops and Tigray People's Liberation Front rebels, at least for now, and the start of a new guerrilla-style stage of the war. And that is something the TPLF knows a lot about.
The TPLF, its roots, it has a storied history when it comes to guerrilla fighting. I mean, when it ruled the country from 1991 to 2018, it was on the back of a 17-year guerrilla struggle prior to 1991 that saw the ousting of Ethiopia's communist regime. So its guerrilla fighters, marched on Ethiopia's capital in 1991 and then began their rule of the country. So it's sort of like resorting to old tactics, age-old tactics from a quarter century before. And the TPLF's chairman, or ousted former regional president, Debretsion Gebremichael, has reiterated several times that he and his forces have no plans on surrendering and that they would continue the fight.
Okay, now if, as the TPLF is vowing, that insurgency drags on, that will exacerbate the exodus of refugees already fleeing from Tigray into neighbouring Sudan. So by some estimates, 43,000 people have already made that journey, and they're arriving in Sudan with horrific stories.
There are no facilities in Hamdayet. There's nowhere to sleep, and there's not much to eat. But tens of thousands of Ethiopians have risked their lives to come here.
We don't have any water, any food. We don't have any transportation.
I went to Humaira to give birth to my child, but then the fighting started and we had to flee. I gave birth to my child while I was running away to come here.
People came armed with machetes and knives, and it was chaos from there. At night, armed men came to my house and threatened us and told us we should leave immediately or we will be killed.
We never expected to be refugee. We never expected to see those shelters. We never expected.
For these refugees, obviously, going to Sudan would mean they'd obviously put a strain on the UNHCR camps already operating in the region. Luckily for them, Sudan has already been hosting thousands of refugees from Eritrea. So the area and Sudan is very accustomed to hosting new arrivals of refugees from the area. Obviously, since November 4th, the influx was significantly larger than what they've grown accustomed to handling in recent years. But UNHCR officials have stated that they are adequately prepared to host as many as 200,000 refugees.
All right, so just to recap where we're at, the government of Abiy Ahmed is back in charge in Tigray at the moment. The TPLF is settling in for a long guerrilla-style insurgency campaign, and unless the government can protect Ethiopians who are fleeing or who've already fled, a humanitarian crisis in refugee camps across the border in Sudan cannot be ruled out. So the key question now really is, what will the Ethiopian government do next?
Well, Zacharias says there are two possible scenarios. One where the central government tries to grant the people of Tigray some concessions to quell local unrest, and the other where Abiy Ahmed takes further steps down the road to autocracy.
I mean, if, for instance, the ousting of the TPLF was to be followed by, a much more democratic society, a much more open society where Tigrayans would feel that they'd have some sort of control of their destiny. Perhaps in the long run, they might say, you know what, this was a worthy sacrifice because at least we have a far more freer society now. But with the trend, with the way things have proceeded with Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed in 2019 and 2020, I feel that he will now be empowered to push on with more dictatorial tendencies. And I feel that with time, the Prime Minister will not, after winning a war, I don't believe that he would comply with democratic procedures. And if he were to lose the polls, I don't believe he would just step down easily. From this point on, and this is my fear, Ethiopia will be entering a new phase of authoritarian rule, because that's what the trend has been for much of this year. And in the long run, this is only going to have a detrimental effect on Ethiopian society. I'm not the most optimistic of observers here.
That's the signal for today. If you're enjoying the podcast, please take a sec to write us a review saying so on Apple Podcasts, and also let your mates know about us. We're on the ABC Listen app, on Spotify, and wherever else you get your podcasts.
And we will catch you tomorrow.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.